You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sharpen your pencils and get your notebooks out. It's time for the Star Seminar. And now, here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Danny Phantom.
Welcome, students, to another edition of our class in footballology. It's the Star Seminar, and we are your professors, Dr. Danny Phantom and Dr. Rabble Rouser. We are here to impart football knowledge unto thee. How are you today, sir? Welcome to our class.
I am feeling quite refreshed, Rabs, because, you know, I got a confession to make. I recently just switched over to being a bidet guy. So
really?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm behind in the times or if
did you choose that on purpose, behind in the times, now that you have a bidet?
Oh, you know what? I could go in all different directions with this here. But my mom, she uses that. I actually had to install it into her bathroom. And she got hooked from one of her friends. And now she's given to, she keeps on trying to push this on us. And I think a lot of the elderly, they just, I don't know. It's a thing for them. But so finally we got it installed, and you know, it's kind of taken a little bit to get warmed up to it. I still don't have a total verdict about it yet, because it's still a little bit weird to me. But so that's a thing now. But and I wanted to ask you, Rabs, are there any kind of weird gadgets or something like that you got around your house or that you use, or like that you swear to, that's like, oh, you got to have one of these?
That's a really great question. Unlike a lot of dudes, I'm not a real big gadget guy. Like a lot of guys are really a bit into their gadgets. I have a lot of tools, and my wife has a lot of kitchen tools. So we've got a lot of really cool, like little kitchen implements that really only have one function, like a nutmeg grater, or, you know, we have some weird attachments on our pasta machine for really like bizarre attachments for like, you know, these sort of specialty pastas that you can only get in Sicily, you know, that kind of stuff. But not so many. But I will tell you about the first time I accidentally used a bidet when I was it was like in the 70s. The first time I went to Europe, we were in a hotel in Paris, and I didn't know what the bidet was for. I didn't even know what a bidet was, and I thought it was a regular toilet. And I sat down and tried to flush, and boy was I surprised! And so I came back out sort of. It was, you know, I was a teenager, so I was very embarrassed about the whole incident. And it maybe took a day or two before I told my mom like what had happened, and she started laughing and was like, no, it's a bidet. The French use it, blah, blah, blah. And she sort of explained what a bidet was for. So I'm glad you got one. That's fantastic. And
thanks, man.
I actually should get one. I should probably get one for my elderly mother, because as you suggested, sometimes, you know, when folks get a little bit older, they can use all the help they can get. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we didn't gather here to together to lecture our students on, bathroom accoutrement. We're here to talk about the great sport of American football. So today what we've got is we're going to be joined by a fine fellow, Corey DeLaGuardia from Battle Red Radio. You know, we talked about this a little bit last week. We only play the AFC teams every 4 years, so we tend not to be as familiar with them. So I'm really glad to have Corey here because he's going to help us catch up on the doings in H-Town and also hopefully shed a little bit of light on this weekend's what's sure to be a bludgeoning, to be to borrow one of Jason Garrett's favorite terms. But before we get that, you know, you actually alerted me to this, and I've been thinking about it a lot. I want to share something that, you know, I've been thinking about since you kind of, you know, raised the question, which is that here we go, an unusual scheduling quirk. We're playing the four AFC South teams in a period of 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing about that is that none of these teams existed before 1984. So a lot of this research is credit to you. You're the one who kind of did this preliminary research. So the Jags were an expansion team in 95. As we know, they came into the league with the Panthers. The Colts moved from Baltimore to Indianapolis in 84. As we know, that also set off a cascade of new franchises in Baltimore because the Browns moved to Baltimore, and then they opened up a new Browns franchise in 99. So all the 90s sort of new franchisees all in some ways were a result of the Baltimore Indianapolis midnight like betrayal, as Baltimore fans will put it, by the Ursays in 1984. As we all know, the Titans were originally the Houston Oilers, which actually was one of my favorite childhood teams. I love the Earl Campbell, you know, Bum Phillips era Oilers. But they moved to Tennessee in 97.
Love the
and
helmets.
Then Houston got a new team after they left in 2002. And that's when the division formed. So it's a collection of teams that other divisions didn't want. Only the Jaguars and Titans were ever division rivals before being thrown together in this new weird amalgamated division. And that was just for a handful of years, because as we just said, like the Jags began to be a team in 95. So it was really only like 5 or 6 years. And to put that in perspective, by that point, by 2002, when these teams were thrown together in division, the NFC East rivalries were already more than 60 years old, and that division had collectively taken home at that point 10 Lombardis and God knows how many, like, you know, NFC championship games, Super Bowl appearances, et cetera, et cetera. So there was these rivalries that we have, it's geographically, it makes no sense, but the rivalries that we have, thanks to Tex Schramm and his marketing genius with those other big market teams in the NFC East, NFC East continues to reign supreme. And, you know, the Eagles have been a rival all of our lifetimes. The Washington team has been a rival all of our lifetimes. You know, the Giants have been a rival all of our lifetimes. So we grew up as fans looking forward to those games, hating those teams. And that has just, you know, like become embedded and deepened. Can you imagine what it's like to be a fan of one of these teams? Like who do you root for? Who do you hate?
Yeah.
Your hate hasn't even had a chance to sort of really like, you know, reduce and develop into a thick sauce. And what's even weirder, imagine you're a longtime fan of Houston sports. What AFC South team are you a fan of now? Did you follow your beloved Oiler players to Nashville and become a Titans fan? Or did you get your heart broken, swear off of them, and learn to love the Texans? And in either case, are you happy with it? Because if either one, it feels like a devil's bargain. Either one of those is a bad choice. Or like our brother RJ Ochoa, did you just say screw it and decide to follow the Cowboys?
So what was RJ a fan of?
He's a fan of the Cowboys. He's a huge fan of the Astros.
Oh, you think he was a possible? No,
I think he's probably even a Rockets fan. I think he might have been. I think he's a Houstonian or at least you know, he's a Texan who follows one Houston team and follows another Dallas team. I don't think he's consistent in his.
I think he's spread out in Texas because I believe he's a Spurs fan. I think he's just got a little bit of Texas everywhere. But I think it's weird. You know, that's one thing that's really strange to me is because you and I are spread out. You know, I'm West Coast, you're East Coast. We're fans of the Cowboys, which is in the middle of the country. But to me, my answer would be it travels. Like, I would be a Titans fan, I guess, to answer your question. If I was an Oilers fan back in the day, I'd be a Titans fan because that's the connection I have with the team. You know, it's those players. It's that organization that I'm drawn to. So I would go with them. And if they got a new team, then I don't even care about that new team. So it wouldn't make any difference to me. So I guess it really, to answer that question, it depends on what type of fan you are. Like for us, I think we travel. We no matter if Dallas moves to Kansas City or North Dakota, we're going to be, you know, fans of the North Dakota Cowboys. But I do think there's other types of fans that are just
Bismarck boys.
The
huh?
Bismarck boys, yeah. the other type of fans that are just they're in it for the camaraderie of the city, you know. Like I have a couple of friends that, strangely enough, have sworn off the Chargers because they moved out of San Diego. They're San Diego loyalty and stuff, but now they're in L.A. They don't want nothing to do with them now. So to me, that's odd. It's like, don't you still like the players and all? But you know, and people are just drawn to the loyalty, and that's, you know, a lot of those are surface fans, is what I call them, just because they're just, they don't really in deep with the players, but they're just, they like to put on the gear and root for the team and just be part of that whole, you know, camaraderie thing. So, yeah, I mean, to me, I to answer your question, I would travel, but I really feel for, it's very puzzling. Like when I started to connect the dots, I'm like, which team was that? Is the Ravens this team? No, the Ravens aren't the Colts. The Ravens are, you know, they're actually the Browns, the actual Browns, who are, have their own team now. So it just, it's really confusing. And it's just, yeah, I mean, but I'm sure that's, everybody's different. Some Houston loyal fans are now Houston Texan fans, and some are Tennessee Titan fans, but it's very odd.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that when, you know, when a team, when you live in a city with a team, with a franchise like that, that franchise, at least for a lot of people who live in that city, becomes a significant part of the experience of that city and the bonding over living in the city together and everything. And so that means that when a franchise leaves a city, it's a profound betrayal. I think it's probably pretty hard to follow that team when they've betrayed you. I mean, it's one thing to say like, "We get out of here, we don't want you," but cities very rarely say that. They. I mean, Houston Oilers fans were fantastic fans. They loved that team, win or lose, and they, you know, they came out and they were great, and they got screwed. You know, I think it's hard. And they got screwed by the ownership. You know, the ownership wanted a bigger, better deal. You know, he was basically pouting and took his toys and went home because he didn't get a new stadium deal or something. I don't even remember the details of it. But I think it's really hard. If you live in the city, I think it's really hard to follow the team. I would imagine that the vast majority of Houstonians said, the heck with you, Titans. We're going to become, you know, we're going to become Texans fans. And we're going to root extra hard whenever you come to town. But you know, the person who could confirm that is our guest lecturer for today. So I tell you what, why don't we get Corey in here and you know, learn a little bit more about what's going on in Houston with the Texans, and maybe we'll even ask him about the Titans. All right, students, put away your cell phones and take a final sip of your lattes, because we have a terrific guest for you here today. Sometimes the object of study is not great, but that does not diminish the scholarship I have for you. Professor Corey DeLaGuardia from University of Houston is here. He's a co-host of Battle Red Radio and part of Battle Red Blog, which is our Texans SB Nation sister site. Professor, how are you today?
I'm doing good. I'd like to say thank you to the academic faculty for having me here today. It's exciting. And yeah, you guys are in for a treat, because you don't get to study the lower levels so well as you do right now.
Indeed. So speaking of lower levels, I want to start with a little recent history. If you could take us back to the end of the 2019 campaign, when the Texans had Bill O'Brien at the helm. Deshaun Watson was under center. They'd just come off of two straight double-digit win seasons, both of which resulted not only in AFC South championships, but the second of which they were on the precipice of beating the super great Chiefs in the divisional round. We know how that turned out. The arrow at that time, I think for all of us, we were looking at that team and saying, this arrow is pointing upward. But since then, man, has that arrow started to point down. So the team has eked out only 9 wins in the two-plus intervening seasons. And for much of that time, they've been at or near the bottom of the league on both sides of the ball. So if you could enlighten us, Professor, what the heck has been going on in Houston?
It's a lot of non-football things that destroyed a football team is basically the quick summary of it, because the reality is losing the Chiefs game really cost Bill O'Brien a little bit of a confidence chip. There were a lot of people in Houston who Bill O'Brien didn't endear himself to anybody. His media interviews were brutal. He wasn't like a good you know, there's some guys who just really know how to manage. J.J. Watt is a saint who walks on water and can do no wrong. And then Bill O'Brien, you know, stays up in the ivory tower and just draws football plays all night like a crazy person, but has no respect for kind of the PR game. And that's what really cost him, honestly. He you know how, like, Barry Bonds is never going to be in the Hall of Fame because, yeah, he cheated, but also there's not a single guy in the media who likes him. So there's nobody saying anything nice for him in the writer's room now. It's the same kind of idea. Bill O'Brien didn't do himself any favors, make any friends. So then all of a sudden in that Chiefs game, there's a weird moment that a lot of people really go to where they did a fake punt that failed. And then the next possession, they were in a similar situation. And if you're willing to do a fake punt, that means you feel like you need these drives at that crucial moment. And then the next drive in the same place, they punted. And then everyone kind of just went, well, now I don't understand why we're doing what we're doing. Like, and it just kind of questioned, it changed a lot of the outlook. In my boys group, all of a sudden, a lot of the boys were like, well, he's got to go. Like, that's it. It's over for Bill O'Brien. And in my personal view was like, well, you can't fire a coach who's in the divisional round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But then what happened over the next 8 months made it almost impossible to keep him. The next thing that happens is Deshaun Watson, after he signs his extension, he's not necessarily sure he trusts Bill O'Brien. He's not necessarily sure he trusts Jack Easterby or McNair. So he says, I want to at least hear the logic that goes into hiring whoever's going to be our next general manager. Well, Nick Caserio became available, and they immediately jumped on it before they called Deshaun Watson. So even though Nick Caserio is viewed league-wide as this really great hire, Deshaun Watson's feelings are hurt because nobody called him. So then Deshaun Watson says, you guys broke your promise. You said you were going to let me know what was going on. Y'all didn't do it. I'm out. I want out. And so he had this big contract. He had these guarantees that he wasn't going to give up, but he didn't want to play anymore. So they come to the agreement that he'll sit out. Well, then everything comes out about him as a person. Then also in the middle of all that, the Hopkins trades had been the year before. Then they let Watt go without a trade. Well, we could have gotten like a third round pick for J.J. Watt easily. So the idea that we just cut him and then he gets $40 million to go to Arizona and we get nothing, all of a sudden Bill O'Brien's looking like a bit of a dummy. And then the Laremy Tunsil extension that is league-wide kind of ignored. It didn't set any sort of – you know, when you sign these top contracts, you're supposed to quote-unquote set a precedent for the next contract. Well, the Laremy Tunsil contract, the next tackle who signed a contract, I believe, was with Baltimore. The agent and the team both ignored the Texans contract as a starting place for negotiations. So it kind of puts us off the board completely. And then after that, people just start getting fired. People start getting cut. The Deshaun Watson story just gets worse and worse and worse. The PR gets worse and worse. And it just spirals so fast that from one offseason to the next, suddenly we're just a train wreck. And our head coach is a guy named Cauley, and he's terrible. And he doesn't even know how to take penalties correctly. And all of a sudden, we're not a football team anymore. And it was very quick.
Now, do you think that in some ways that the sort of like germanness of this was already there festering during the good Bill O'Brien years? And in some ways it's just there was something going on there, like where there was just like a problem in the front office and the relationship with the front office and the coaching staff, et cetera? Or is this just a weird set of circumstances that just kind of happened and no one had the power to stop it?
So a lot of it goes back to a lot of the sports writers, and I know a few of them, I've done some freelance writing for a lot of sports websites, so I know a lot of these guys. And in a back room with over a whiskey, what they'll tell you is that Jack Easterby was a big source of a lot of these problems. Mm-hmm. He was a football operations guy for us, but his entire resume apparently was built on kind of this weird web of lies where if he said that he worked for Jacksonville in the personnel department, he would tell you he helped make decisions. If you were to check that, Jacksonville would say that he was a volunteer helping with the scouting department. So, like, nothing he ever really laid out exactly the way he said it. So there was kind of always this air of – he really felt like he conned his way into a really good spot. Mm-hmm. So then he kind of went after a lot of guys to kind of consolidate his power base, and it really seems like in the behind-the-scenes part of things – he's a big reason why things didn't work out. Now, I do think also people didn't trust Bill O'Brien because a lot of the moves didn't pan out. You know, if the Hopkins trade goes better for you, and David Johnson plays well and things like that, then all of a sudden you don't look as crazy. But David Johnson underperformed. He got a lot of money in the trade. I wasn't a big fan of keeping Hopkins because every offseason he kept asking for more money and more money. And he put Arizona over a barrel where now they've paid Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray and Hopkins make up a large percentage of their cap for the next 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. There were things where, like, on paper, maybe they made sense, but the delivery sucked and the execution never worked out. So it probably was festering and no one's, almost like if you have like a tiny infection, you don't realize what it's doing. And the next thing you know, they're like, you have sepsis and hours to live. And you're like, what happened? So it's kind of like that.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. So we just got rid of a wide receiver for nearly nothing as far as draft capital. But I tell you what, you know, the Hopkins thing was, it's still puzzling to me because there's nothing about him that made me think like, why do people think he's not good? He's not aging. He's not, to me, he's one of the best receivers in the league. And then for them to make that deal, it's just really crazy. But nonetheless, I want to move on to actually the players that are still on this Texans team. On Wednesday, the Texans announced that the second-year quarterback David Mills would again start. He'll be starting against the Cowboys, which moves Kyle Allen to the bench. A little not-so-fun fact, is that the last time the Cowboys faced a team starting Allen at quarterback, the Cowboys were actually handed a 22-point blowout loss when he played for Washington. So, I'm not sad to not face Allen, but I want you to tell us. Tell us about Mills. I mean, what does Mills bring to the table?
Oh, not a lot. Not a lot, honestly. he's the guy who shows up at Thanksgiving bringing pretty much the sodas, and then he's like, so what are we eating? He's basically the me of Thanksgiving. I don't honestly know. They couldn't leave Kyle Allen out there. He completely underperformed. But the problem is, Davis Mills hadn't done anything to make you think that the reason they went to Kyle Allen is how bad Davis Mills had been. Basically what happened was the first guy played so bad that they said, okay, well, we got to try somebody else. Then the second guy played so bad that they said, okay, well, at least the other guy was better than this. So Kyle Allen, really what he does is he helps make the argument that Davis Mills has to finish the season as the starter. But he doesn't do any – it doesn't help either one of them as far as advancing their career or solidifying, like, what's next for them. Because Davis Mills, coming out of last year, he had some really interesting statistics about how he could throw accurately deep. This year, that's starting to prove out that that's no longer the case. Mm. Also, this whole season, he has really struggled with hitting open receivers under 10 yards. So if there's a guy open 4 yards out on the out there by the hash, the opposite hash, he's going to miss him. Or he's going to throw high. Or he's going to make the guy work for it for some reason. And I think part of that is nerves and excitement. But also I think part of that is just that you got to remember, he is a third round pick from a lesser school football-wise. There's not a lot to the pedigree that makes you go, okay, well, this guy's going to figure it out and perform. And after the almost 20 games that they've given him as a starter, you sort of start to know what you have in a guy after about 20 games, and it doesn't appear to be there. It's not trending the right way.
You know, it's whenever I see a young quarterback who's not on a great team thrown to the wolves like this, it reminds me of things that Bill Parcells said during his Hall of Fame speech, where he was like, there's a lot of coaches, there's a lot of quarterbacks. He said this all the time when he was talking to the media too, who just never get the opportunity to grow because they're sort of thrown to the wolves, you know. And in listening to you talk about Mills, it makes me think of guys like Geno Smith or Mike White, who almost ended up out of the league, you know, and ended up getting a second chance. But sometimes it takes a guy 5 years. And so, I mean, I don't know if Mills is that kind of guy. I don't know if he's ever going to get that chance. But, you know, it wouldn't shock me to see him, if he manages somehow to stick around, to see him be a competent quarterback. But I mean, it just takes so long to figure it out. It's an impossibly difficult position to play, and you know, to play it for a team that's pretty thin. I'm guessing pretty thin on weapons, where he doesn't get a lot of support. That must be really, really, really tough. So I provided myself a lovely segue here, because I would like to talk about some of the other weapons. You know, Houston's offense in the last couple of years or so has produced the least amount of yards in what is now actually the last couple consecutive years. So they're second worst in points scored this year as well. And so I guess, you know, what's the biggest cause of their offensive struggles? I mean, you've already sort of talked about the problems with a quarterback. And what are you most worried about when you're facing the Cowboys defense, which is sort of unusually good this year?
Yeah, so talent-wise, it's been a frustrating couple of years, because last year they sort of knowingly surrounded their young players with below average NFL players, guys on their way out. But they did that because these were the quote unquote, you know, character guys, the guys who are going to go in and work every day in the locker room. And internally, the way I've been describing it is they went and got guys who were hanging on by a thread and just wanted one more year, one more shot at the league. They just wanted to stay in the league. If I get my 6 years of play eligibility, I got my benefits, I got my all this. These are guys who they know how they know they value playing football at this level and are trying to stay in the league. So you want to surround your young guys with guys like that, because you want to show them what it looks like to take care of your body, what these guys are putting themselves through to stay in the league. You want to show these guys, you know, what it takes to be an NFL player. The problem is these guys aren't talented. They're not. The reason they're struggling, the reason they're almost out of the league, is because they're not good enough to stay in the league. But Lovie Smith has done a good job this year of kind of building the Lovie Smith defense, and they found some guys that really kind of fit it. Lovie Smith, his front four, get pressure on quarterbacks. And so all of a sudden, Hughes, which was not a name anyone had said in a while, you know, he was the quiet guy in Buffalo. You know, all of a sudden, he, I think up until 2 weeks ago, was third in the league in sacks. So they are doing a better job this year of putting people in positions to succeed. And also, I think it's just because this year they do have more young players that are pushing for time, pushing for spots. We did have a guy in the middle of the season who quit, because once Christian Harris was healthy, they took away some of that guy's snaps so that Christian Harris could play more. And my thought on that was, well, first of all, goodbye. Like, that's okay. Like, no one's signing anybody off of the Texans team. Like, no one's going, oh, thank God the Texans released a guy, let's go check him out. Mm-hmm. So if you want to leave the Texans, that means you're saying you're tired of playing football. So that's fine. You can leave. But also, you know, if he didn't understand what the assignment was, it was to show these young guys how to play football. And so if Christian Harris needs the snaps to play, then he's going to get the snaps to play. Like, that's mm-hmm. going to be what happens. This year and next year is going to be about giving these young guys the chance to go out there and really show it, because we got all this draft capital from the Deshaun Watson trade with the intention of drafting and playing these young guys into starters and pros. So guys that can help us, there's not a lot. And honestly, the receiving corps took a really hard downturn this year that I don't think anybody expected. I don't think anyone expected Brandon Cooks to have 400 yards. Mm-hmm. Nico Collins has looked like a guy who's allergic to the football. It's been rough. And the receiving core hasn't done much to help. But then also, like I said, Davis Mills on the easy throws makes them work really, really hard for it. So I can also understand them losing faith. Brandon Cooks gave just about the worst quote anyone's ever given in the history of the NFL about 2 weeks ago. Coming out for the Miami Dolphins game, they said, hey, when did you realize this game was getting out of reach? And he said, when we came out of the locker room. That's not what you want to hear. You don't ever want to hear that from a pro.
Yeah, that's a frustrating dude.
Getting money, you know, because mm-hmm. Brandon Cooks is one of the few guys on the team getting paid. Mm-hmm. And that was disappointing. But he's, you know, he's underperforming. And he's been mysteriously hurt most of these last couple weeks. So I think he's kind of ducking his responsibilities there. It is what it is, though.
But, you know, speaking of giving young guys a chance, I wanted to talk about one young guy in particular. if the Texans are to have any chance in this game, it feels like they have to get the running game going. And running back Damian Pierce was hot out of the gate early. You know, he's looking like a fourth round steal, but then he's cooled off as of late. In fact, he had a couple back-to-back 8-yard rushing games here recently, which is extremely, you know, puzzling. But what version of Pierce should we expect to see against the Cowboys' defensive dragon, whose one missing skill is stopping the run?
That was a Lord of the Rings reference, in case you didn't pick it up.
No, I got it. I liked it. You guys do struggle a little bit against the run, which does make me feel a little better about this matchup. The last couple of weeks, we've just played teams that are going to line up and going to go after the run. They're not okay with letting teams run the ball on them. That's part of their defensive identity. And unfortunately, it's the one thing that we've had any sort of success doing, and the one thing we look competent at is the run game. Mm-hmm. And so these last couple of weeks, it's been a battle of, you know, finger quotes here, battle of wills, strength versus strength. And our strength isn't like other teams' strengths right now. This is the frustrating thing about covering sports in Houston right now, is there's a lot of delusion about where this franchise is supposed to be. There's a lot of conversation about firing Nick Caserio, firing Lovie Smith. When is Cal McNair going to have enough of this and clean house and blah, blah, blah. And the reality is, this was a pretty bare set of circumstances. Like, there wasn't a lot of talent on this roster when Bill O'Brien left. Mm-hmm. And especially after Deshaun Watson says he's not coming back. So our strength isn't quite up to par of other people's strengths yet. So, yeah, when we run well, it's because the other team also struggles to stop the run. Damian Pierce is the real deal, though. I do believe that. I think we have a good little window with him, kind of like with Arian Foster, where there's about 4 or 5 years of high-quality running from him. And hopefully we can pair that with a defense peaking and a quarterback, you know, peaking, and we can be, in a year or two or three, one of those teams who is stealing the division, and then maybe from there, who knows? The reason I even say maybe next year, just because I don't have a lot of faith in the AFC South overall. Seeing you guys essentially end Matt Ryan's career on Sunday night, and then also hearing that the Titans the same weekend fired their general manager while they're in first place in the division. And then I've just never been a big believer in Jacksonville. So I really feel like every year you come into the year kind of going, is this the year the Titans and Colts collapse? And if it is, who's going to steal the division? So
why not us?
Why not? And that is kind of what I always, in the back of my mind, I'm always sort of like, but Mike Vrabel's such a good coach, and it's just not likely. Although I don't understand what's going on in the front office. I'm not sure why they would fire the GM.
Yeah, and you know, we started by talking about 2019, and at that point, not only were the Texans looking good, but they'd won the division, I think, 6 of the previous 9 years. And so, like, they were the dominant team in the division.
They really were. Bill O'Brien had, for all of his whatever, he had really done a good job of instilling winning football.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, it wasn't enough to keep – I mean, just the fans were always calling for his job. Like, and part of that's local sports. I've learned that now doing national sports. A lot of local sport is always like, okay, yeah, he might have 10 wins, and the national public says, oh, he's doing good. But at home, they're always like, why did he take that timeout in the second quarter? What was he doing there? What was the play? How did you guys feel when you guys got Mike McCarthy?
Well, we have a split view here. I actually liked the hire within the context of the Joneses. So the Joneses are only ever going to hire someone who will allow them to remain comfortable and to sort of do the things they want to do, which is
I agree with that.
Which is basically to operate with a low level of accountability. And so they're never going to hire someone like Bill Parcells again. Jerry famously said when Bill Parcells finally stepped away, oh, good, we can start having fun again. You know, like, it's just not fun for him. And, I mean, I think the Joneses desperately, desperately, desperately want to win. But they
want to win on their terms.
But they want to win on their terms. They'll never say it that way. They're not aware of that necessarily. They think that their terms are actually a structure that is conducive to winning. So given all that, there's only a certain type or a couple of different coaches in Dallas, one of which is someone like Jason Garrett, who's a sort of homegrown dude, whose family And the other, a guy like McCarthy, who's perfectly happy to say, fine, you take care of that. I don't care about the circus. I'll just take care of my guys. And I will say he doesn't care about, I think he and his coaching staff give a lot of input into personnel and the draft and things like that. But for the most part, he stayed out of it, which has actually allowed them to draft more purely. They've actually had, under his tenure here in Dallas, three really strong drafts. They're a really talented young team because they've hit on four or five guys, you know, from superstars like Micah Parsons, but also just like some really, really good like role players on the third day. So, and you know, after that disastrous first year, he's got the team playing hard. He's got the team winning consistently. The last 2 years, they have as many wins as anybody in the league, tied with Kansas City. So, I mean, I don't know you can ask for much more, but you should ask Dan what he thinks, because Dan's been a McCarthy hater since the jump. I don't know if he's been a convertite or not.
I think I might be somewhere in the middle with you guys then, because I do think when he got fired from Green Bay, it was the right move. Mm-hmm. When he got hired, I was very surprised at the idea. But then I really kind of was like, but Mike McCarthy strikes me as a guy who's just happy to have a job. So like, yeah, and he does have the Super Bowl ring. So that's the kind of credibility that Jerry Jones can sell to Dallas. Like, this guy's already did it once, so he'll just do it again here, obviously. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm not a big believer in, like, when the chips are down and someone's got to make that tough choice, if Mike McCarthy's the guy in my ear sending that play in, I don't know how much faith I have.
Absolutely.
So I'm probably with Dan on that.
Absolutely, Corey. You nailed it, too. And I agree with everything that Rab said, too. And it does take – there is a small range of actual coaches that actually fit into what the Jones is. So it's really difficult to be the head coach. But for me, the biggest issue I have with – and first off, I think he's doing a really good job. And I love how he stays out of things and lets his coaches do their thing, let the draft people do their thing. Those are great things. And I think it's why this team is as successful as they are. But what really I don't care for McCarthy, and this came with his, you know, later years in Green Bay, what limited action I saw, I just think that he was a net negative to as far as what he added to in-game decisions. And I wasn't just going to automatically dislike him because he's the Cowboys' new head coach. Those things were real things there, and I'm seeing those things also in Dallas too. So I don't know. I think he's kind of blah to me. I mean, I don't hate McCarthy, but he's not like he's on my list of great coaches by any means.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Yeah, I definitely, so I put him and Josh McDaniels on our show when we talk about kind of like bad coaching. Him and Josh McDaniels to me are the two guys that have tricked the league into giving them credit for things that I don't think they've earned. Mm. And then also, I mean, they're for some reason, they're always hireable. Like, if Mike McCarthy was fired tomorrow, for some reason, there'd be another NFL franchise calling 2 weeks from now, asking if he wants to come on and run their offense or come on and be their head coach. Just like Josh McDaniels, his phone will never not ring, no matter what's going on with, you know, how bad. Like, I can't think of a time when Josh McDaniels has done a great job, and that still hasn't stopped that man from being employed and highly employed everywhere he goes.
I think his first five games at Denver, he was terrific, and then he was exposed thereafter. And
that was because they were apparently recording everything. They got a guy caught recording the practices of the other teams.
He brought that from New England with him. Yeah. So I think the proof's going to be in the pudding. You know, I will.
Is this
say
the year for you guys?
What's that?
Is this the year for you guys?
Maybe.
It's a year. Who knows?
We got a shot.
It's a weird year because the Cowboys are really, really good and they're in second place in their division. You know.
Yeah, but I think that does you guys a little bit of a favor. Because yeah, really? I think usually when you guys come into the playoffs, first of all, obviously I hate you guys as a Houston native. Sure. And when you come into the playoffs, I'm rooting all out against y'all. But every time you guys come in with so much hype. Yeah, I think coming in as the wild card is kind of a favor for y'all.
And I think this team is actually physically and mentally tough enough to do that. Well, I mean, maybe we're wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. But I think that they, you know, they play the kind of way you need to, and they have the guys that you need to who to be able to go that route. Well, you know, we'll see. It's going to be really hard. It's likely right now that the quarterbacks they'll have to face will be Brady, and then they'll have to go against Philadelphia, because they'll probably be the lowest remaining seed, and then they'd have to go either to Minnesota or San Francisco, and that's.
Does that Brady matchup scare you guys?
Yeah, it does to me. Any extra game scares me. I mean, any extra game you got to play, it's a game you could lose. It's a game you could underperform. And if it's a game Tom Brady's playing, it's a game that he could beat you, because the Cowboys never beaten Tom Brady. So, I'm worried about it. I'd much rather have the extra rest, extra, you know, not have to play that. But I do. You make a good point. But I mean, to me, I don't know if that factors in as much as I think it could be. It could happen and it could not happen. The Cowboys could win the Super Bowl just as easily as they could have a first round exit. There's too many things that always come into play. You got to be playing great football. And, you know, for us Cowboy fans, we don't know what we're going to get. You know, maybe they do. I certainly think they have a team that they are definitely one of the, you know, few teams that have a real legit shot to win it all.
Yeah, they're a legitimate contender. I think the longer I follow this sport, the more I realize that, especially in the playoffs, because it's a parity-driven league, and that's intentional, is that you just have to get lucky. I mean, I can't name a Super Bowl champion in the last few years who wasn't lucky, and I honestly don't think that I can name one who was definitively the best team in the league. I'm trying to think, like, when's the last time someone won the Super Bowl? Maybe the Seahawks in 2013, where they were clearly, like, the best team.
Them, and I think the Chiefs team that won the year after they lost to the Buccaneers, the second run, that Chiefs team, they went back and had retooled the defense, and they had like a top 10 defense and the Patrick Mahomes offense. Mm-hmm. I think that was another hyper-dominant team. But yeah, a lot of these Super Bowls wind up being hyper-close.
But really, even, I mean, you know, but even like you look at the Chiefs, they had a close come from behind win against San Francisco. They lost to the Buccaneers, and then they lost to Cincinnati in the title game.
Yeah,
and they've been the best team in football for 3 years. And they have the best quarterback. They have all world quarterback, and they've only got one to show for it. It's a really tough thing in football.
It is.
I mean, you gotta find the team. It's so close, and you know, when you're playing other good teams, the games are close, and close games are decided oftentimes by a lucky bounce, a referee deciding to call the same thing on this play that's happened on a whole bunch of other plays,
or a bad McCarthy coaching decision,
or you know, a bad coaching decision, exactly. So I think that one game that's probably not likely to be as close as playoff games is Sunday's tilt. So at least we still got to talk about this.
Okay.
At least the odds makers don't believe so. We've got to round this into shape now. So as you, I'm sure, well know, the oddsmakers have the Cowboys as a 17-point favorite. I'm not going to ask you who wins and who loses. I mean, obviously, if the Texans win, it's going to be an upset for the ages. It'll be more shocking than their first win in franchise history, because this Cowboys team is considerably better than that moribund Cowboys team that they beat way back in 2002. So I'm going to ask you, instead of who wins, who loses, do you think the Texans can cover, and why or why not?
No, they won't cover. The Cowboys are going to win. We've just started talking about this on our show. We'll do our picks next episode. And honestly, no. Yeah, I don't. The Cowboys are going to walk away with this cover. I took last week, the Browns were a 10-point favorite. And I even said going into the pick'em, I've been pretty good this year about like kind of forecasting what the games look like. And I even said, I really think Deshaun Watson is going to go out there and look like a bum, because it's been 2 years since he's played professional football. I said, he's going to go out there and look like a guy totally lost. And I still don't think we covered the 10.
Yeah.
And so we did both the 10 held and the under that we called also. Mm-hmm. So I do believe, I think, I don't know what the total on this one is yet. I haven't looked at that yet, but the 17 points, I don't like our chances. And it's just because you guys are right. Y'all are young and talented, whereas we are overwhelmingly old and under enthused is probably the best way to say it. We're ready for the season to be over. It feels like a lot of these guys are just kind of going, 5 more weeks. Let's just get through it. I mean, was it Bland, the corner for y'all? I mean, he was your third string corner, and he goes out there and he gets 2 interceptions and looks like a starter. Like, you guys have a lot of guys right now contributing in big ways that you don't have to be good, and you guys also have it, and you're great. So It is kind of a frustrating situation as someone who roots against you guys. But no, I don't like our chances. I think the Cowboys are correctly 17-point favorites. I said in practice all week what I would do if I was the head coach of the Texans is I was right minus 20 everywhere. I would just write minus 20 on all the boards, on everything, everywhere I go, minus 20. That's what everyone thinks of you guys. And then if my team goes out and plays flat, okay, they don't care anymore. Like, that's that's what I would do. But I don't like our chances.
I tend to agree with you. I think the Cowboys are too explosive. And I think the point you make about their youth is right, because if the Cowboys were a sort of savvy, tired veteran team at the end of a year, they would probably do just enough to win. They would give a 75% effort, win by 7 and call it a day. But these young pups, they don't know any better. They're still in college where they're used to winning by 30, you know, if they went to Georgia or something like that. So I think they're more likely to try to run up the score. Or second team guys are more excited. You're going to be more likely to go in there and try to make big plays because they're young and excitable. So
they're all trying to get their stats still. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but they're also trying to get their stats.
Absolutely.
They're still wanting, you know, Michael Parsons doesn't want anyone, you know, he somehow tricked a few people into even saying the words MVP. So, like, he's definitely going to go out there, and even if it's fourth quarter and they're up by 15, he's going to want to go out there and get a couple more sacks, get a fumble touchdown. You know, these guys know they're hungry. They know this is an opportunity. This is a game. I'm trying to think. For a little while there, DeMarcus Lawrence, when he would play, was it Philly? He would consistently get, like, 3 or 4 sacks, like, each time. Mm-hmm. Like, they know this is an opportunity for your guys individually to really, really shine. I got to think Zeke has been eating a lot of extra Campbell's soup or whatever it is that he gets paid by right now. I think he's the bigger thing about y'all's long-term future is how they handle him. But I think for the purposes of this year, I think he's ready to go. And I think him and Pollard want to tag team for 200 yards, probably.
I think that's right. Danny, where do you fall on this?
You know, it's weird. I'll tell you what, I'm not going to say much about it, but I think we're going to goose them. I think this is a game where the Texans don't score anything. I don't know necessarily that it will be an offensive, you know, annihilation. So they may barely cover, but they may do so in like a 20-0 fashion or something. But I'm like, well, how are they going to score any points? And, you know, I think Corey has said it. I mean, the Cowboys, they are deep. All those guys are super tenacious. Unless the Texans have some plan to capitalize on that over-aggressiveness, I don't even know where I'm trying to envision them crossing the 50, you know, and it's just, I don't know. So, I mean, I just don't, points are going to be
somewhere, somewhere there's going to be one of those Cowboys mistakes that you guys always make where, like, y'all kick it out of bounds for no reason at the start of a half or something. Like, we'll have a drive.
There'll be a short field and a field goal or something.
Yeah. We'll have a drive somewhere.
McCarthy will go for it on his own 30, and you guys will get a field goal. That's
yeah. We'll have a drive somewhere.
I'm surprised to see like 37-6 or something.
Yeah.
At any rate,
that'll happen.
Listen, I wish you luck this Sunday. I mean, I hope at least something happens where like a young player plays really well and gives you guys some hope for the future or something. I mean, listen.
Unless it's Damian Pierce.
Anybody can. You know, I mean, things happen. The ball's oblong. Weird stuff happens. Thanks so much for jumping on with us. I really appreciate it. Please tell the people before you head out, please tell the people where they can find your fine, fine work.
Yes. You can always check out the Battle Red blog. Like they said, we're all members of the Vox Media Nation on SB Nation. You can also check out Nerd Thug Radio. It's a Spotify podcast. Our producer's my little brother, so he and I, we also make that show. And then I also produce comic books. If you were to search Nerd Thug Radio on Google or on Facebook, you would find us and find links where I also do all kinds of things. Thanks for having me on, guys. I really like y'all's formatting with the school element. I think that's a cool angle on this. We're always trying to find creative ways to entertain, and I think what you guys have here is that's smart. I like it. You guys are doing a really cool thing.
Awesome. Thanks, dude.
Thanks, Corey.
Appreciate you coming on.
All right. Y'all have a good one.
You too. Thank you.
Right. You know, my friend, I feel like we say this every week, but it's always true. I guess that's why we always say it. It's really great to have a guest who follows the other team closely, because we don't have the ability to follow that many teams that closely. And so we get a lot of insider information. We get a sense of, you know, what the fan base and especially the smart thinking fan base thinks about a team. And that really, I don't know, it really helps me to contextualize the team, the upcoming game, the opponent, et cetera. So I really enjoy these conversations.
Yeah, I think it's a really tough spot to be in when your team has only got one win. And
oh, man, can you imagine?
And when you're, you know, you follow them so closely and you got your, you know, your head into what they're doing and everything, it just, I think it was really entertaining to engage with Corey, and he's very honest about it. He doesn't really try to, you know, that you don't get this, like, you know, we're better than a record type things. He's just really, you know, he's just a really honest fan. And I really appreciate people like that. And that's what I like to do on our show. And just, I like to just kind of keep things real. And speaking of which, Rabs.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yes.
Please do tell.
Speaking of which, it's seemingly looking like the OBJ thing is not going to happen. There seems to be some apprehensions going on about his availability. So I don't know. I mean, we've been hearing about how this is just a foregone conclusion. Cowboys media, everybody who has a platform has saying this is happening this time, it's different, you know. And then here we are with the Cowboys front office acting like the Cowboys front office, and it's not happening. So I mean, I know your answer to this, Rabs, is not surprised at all. This is, I mean, you're one of the few people that have aligned with me on this, not so much on Twitter like I do, but yeah, I mean, so this is not new information to you, correct?
No, not at all. And so, you know, you and I had a few pods ago talked about this, and then we kind of let it lay low. I'm not sure whether we actually said this during a broadcast or during one of our other conversations, but I think I asked you what the percentage chance you thought that he'd be, that they'd bring him in. And you said something like 12% or something like that. It was pretty, pretty low. And I agreed at the time. And there's always been two things for me. And in some ways they've shifted an import. One was, maybe actually three things. One was price, right? I think what the Cowboys really want to do is get a guy in here for a handful of games at the veteran minimum so that he can be a difference maker and they can get someone to put sort of, you know, give them a little bit of extra juice when the games get close. But they don't want to pay a lot, especially for a guy who's injured and has that that many injury uncertainties. The other, of course, then is the injury uncertainties themselves. And one of the things that we've been talking about when we think about, and I think we put this in the context of Michael Gallup, is, you know, Gallup got injured before earlier in the season last year than OBJ did. And he's only just now rounding into form. So if we really think about how long it takes to round into form, then the likelihood of him being available, even if he had a really sort of, you know, ideal rehabilitation process, you know, he's not going to be available before sometime in December. So what are you going to pay for that? So right. the balance there between how much are you going to pay and when is he available was always sort of the question. And then we began to hear more and more that he's not even going to work out. You know, he's not even available to work out. So, so it seems like it became increasingly clear that if they were going to sign him, it was going to have to be to a situation that protected them if he's not available. I mean, he can't even work out. How can they even make a determination?
Right.
So the other thing then is, as the OBJ talk has been happening, the other Cowboy receivers and the Cowboy passing game in general has really begun to take off. Mm-hmm. And the Cowboys are scoring, you know, literally at the top of the league. And, you know, the passing game hasn't been amazing, but Michael Gallup has emerged. You know, the sort of four-headed tight end has really emerged, and all those guys are making plays. I mean, when you have that many tight ends, I don't think you really, and of course, Pollard has emerged as an incredibly explosive option out of the backfield. So I think when you have that many dudes making plays, they don't have to line up at wide receiver. All that matters is that you have guys making plays, and they do. Mm-hmm. So he's become increasingly a luxury. So the question is, how much do you pay for someone who's a luxury and can't even work out? And I think that the answer is you pay the absolute minimum.
Right.
And it's possible you pay the minimum this year, and then you have, you know, a sort of incentive laden deal or, you know, even a good deal for the next couple of years. I think Beckham wants more than that.
Right.
At least right now.
No.
And so, it just didn't seem like it was ever going to happen. You know, unless he was the kind of cat who was going to say, yeah, I'm injured now, I'll give you guys something at veteran minimum with, you know, with some incentives for touchdowns and receptions or something like that, which I think the Cowboys would have been happy to go for. But it sounds like he didn't want to do that. He wanted more protection. He wanted the kind of contract that was going to protect him based upon the very top end of his production when he was an elite wide receiver, which frankly was 4 or 5 years ago. And so I don't know that anybody will sign him. I mean, I don't know that Buffalo wants to sign him to those terms. And I don't know that the Giants want to sign him to those terms unless they have some money to burn because they want to, you know, they want to appease a fan base as their season starts to go into the tank. So, so this is basically an opportunity for both of us to say to everybody, I told you so. It didn't ever seem like it could possibly happen. And let me add one more thing before I give you a chance to put on your gloaty shoes and take a whirl around the track. Which is that, as you were saying earlier, everybody's been saying, oh, this time it's different. Oh, they've been courting him openly. There's a reason for that. And that is that he's a free agent who is not attached to any team. So there's no tampering rules. So that's why the Cowboys are able to address it more openly. The other thing is, usually during free agency, the media does not have daily access to the players because they're not in a game week. They're actually getting ready to start OTAs. Like, they're not around. They're not available. So people are saying it's different, but it's different because of circumstances. You can talk about that. Jerry and Steven can talk about this guy because it's not tampering. And the team is there being asked by the media constantly. So it's not like this is different. It's not like the team felt differently. What's different is the circumstances within which those kinds of questions happen. There was availability and access, and there was an opportunity for transparency that existed that doesn't typically exist with free agents. It's not that they wanted him more. It's not that they were courting him harder. It's that the media had more opportunities to ask questions so they could write their articles about him.
Yeah.
That's what was different.
Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, people seem to lose sight of that fact too, because Yeah, the Cowboys did not show any greater interest. I mean, if you listen to every interview of Jerry Jones, not once did he lead us on. He gave us the same type of answers. He's always, of course, you know, that they're interested in a player doesn't, you know, they always tell you about things like that. Whether it's the players in free agency, they don't say, oh no, we have no interest in that. You know, so to me, I just feel like us as fans kind of just let our guard down for a moment and just realized. And let ourselves believe that things were somehow different when really they aren't. And of course, we have a really great team. Everybody, they got their eye on the prize. So you talk about feels all the time, Rabs, and an OBJ signing would add all kinds of goodness to those feels. It's not how the front office behaves. And, you know, so I mean, this isn't like any great reveal to me. This is just, I feel like all the pieces were there and you just got to piece them together. And to me, I would be surprised if the Cowboys did sign him because it would be out of character. And there were so many factors that came into play. But I just want to say, and I'll be done with the OBJ thing for a while, is, you know, I've said this before because I've been asked this because everyone says, hey, you love the front office, right? Well, if they go after OBJ, wouldn't you support that? Wouldn't you think that's a great move? And my answer is yes, I would, because that means the front office believes this is the right move. And the fact that they're not now changes nothing for me. I believe in this front office, and look at how well this team has drafted. I mean, we're just coming off a game where we had so much contribution from our rookie draft class. I mean, how do you not believe in our guys? So to me, that is just, I don't know. I mean, I think everybody needs to really back off the front. Everybody loves Will McClay. Why aren't they just willing to be more accepting and happy about this front office? I mean, Rabs, what do you think about what you saw on Sunday night when you saw Bland pick the ball off twice and you're seeing all these great things happening from these rookies? I mean, are you not happy with how this front office is operating?
You know me, I've been ecstatic about the way this front office is operating for a while now. So yes, I think that you're very wise to bring this up, because I really feel like this in some ways is the other side. It's the flip side of the Odell Beckham coin. You know, you said earlier that would be out of character. I think there are parameters within which it would be in character, which is, as we talked about earlier, if they get him for veteran minimum, they get him for $1.2 million or something like that, where there's something where they can get a guy who can make a difference, be a difference maker for the rest of this year, maybe even next year, but probably not, where they can get him at a reasonable price. And that does seem to be in character. And so in some ways, what the question is he willing to align himself with the Cowboys' character? And right now the answer is no. Yeah. But I think the flip side of that, as you've mentioned, is that this rookie class continues week on week to astound us. You know, so, I mean, let's just talk about, you know, Tyler Smith far exceeded expectations, and it looks like he's getting ready in the next couple weeks to kick back into guard permanently, where I think actually he can be an even better player than he was at tackle. He's a power player, but he's also incredibly athletic. One of the things that he's going to give them is they have Zach Martin and Terrence Steele on the right side. And that side has really developed a chemistry, but they're both great foot athletes in addition to being bullies in the run game. And if Tyron Smith can be anything resembling his former all-pro self, I mean, that's an open question,
right?
But if he can, with Tyler Smith, who's now been seasoned and become a better foot athlete because he's had to work at it, playing left tackle, can move inside. You've got guys who can pin and pull. You've got guys who can, I mean, they can run the full gamut of running plays to both sides, because in Tyler Smith and in Zach Martin, you have big, strong, bulldozer tackles, or excuse me, guards who can push the pile forward, but you've also got guys who can be nimble and pull outside and lead to the outside. I mean, the entire playbook is available at an elite level. So that's just one. Sam Williams, my God, Sam Williams. I mean, he's going to be an all pro. He's incredible. He's so explosive, so athletic, and so incredibly strong. And then you've got, you know, Jake Ferguson is incredible. Deron Bland has been incredible. to help me out here, who's some of the sort of
Damone Clark?
Thank you, Damone. Oh my God! I mean, the entire defense is coming together because Damone Clark provides something that Anthony Barr can't. I don't know what the exact snap count distribution was on Sunday night, but it's clear that both of them are playing right now. But I think we also talked about the fact that by the end of the season, don't expect that Anthony Barr will be taking a majority of the snaps. I think he's going to get Wally Pitt by Damone Clark, who's just, I mean, I think we thought, okay, this is a smart flyer to take him when they did, but it's possible that he'll never play again. And in fact, you know, he came back a year earlier than anybody thought he could. And he's been incredible. He's an unbelievable athlete, maybe even a better athlete than Micah Parsons at the linebacker position. And he's smart. He's still learning, but man, I mean, he's so athletic. It's incredible. And so one earlier, even when I was poo-pooing the time we'd sit down with a guest from an opposing team and talk about what we thought the final score was. I mean, you were ribbing me about it a little bit, very gently. You're a good man, but every week you say, "Oh, Rabs is against the Cowboys," and I was, because I didn't think they could make enough explosive plays in the passing game. But the hope was that they would get Dak Prescott back, hopefully, and because they're such a young team, because they've had three straight rookie classes that have, elite players at the top, as well as really, really surprisingly good contributors, who are coming from the ranks of the day three draftees, that this is a young team that's going to get better and better and better. And that's exactly what has happened. I mean, they are getting better and better, and the young guys are getting more snaps, and they're acquitting themselves well, and they're healthier because they're younger. They stay, they don't get injured as easily, and they don't stay injured as long. And it's allowing the old heads to not have to rely on the old, it's allowing the front office not to have to rely on the old heads, but it's also allowing the old heads to take time off, et cetera. It's a glorious thing. And I don't know what's going to happen with this season, because it's a weird year to be as good as they are and still be second in their division. I think there's still a chance they can win the division. I think that the route, if they win the division, will be significantly easier than if it's not. I don't think that the narrative that our good friend Corey was suggesting, which is that, they always choke in the playoffs or, that kind of thing, that they're going to cowboy. I think that's really a year to year thing. I don't necessarily believe that. I think this team is tougher than recent teams of recent vintage, and they can go farther. But all that said, I still would like them to be able to do that at home. As I think, I also think that the speed of this defense and the way the offense works, I think that they're built to win on turf. And I think that if they can, we know that all their home games or all their playoff games are going to be at home. They're just that much more formidable. But they are going to be a better team in the first round of the playoffs than they are now, which is a terrifying thought, because they're young, because these rookies are all on the come. I mean, they're only going to get better.
Yeah, I totally agree. I am excited about where this season can go, and one of the things that we will even take a look at to later as we get closer to that Christmas Eve matchup is we want to kind of really get a good feel about the playoff layouts and some things going on, because not everybody has their quarterbacks and stuff. It's kind of getting kind of crazy in the NFC. Yeah. So, I mean, which is the right path? Which is the one we want to be on? Do we have to face Brady again? All these kind of things it can get a little messy. And I think, that will be something that we will provide our listeners on future shows as we look at that closer. But that is all we have for today. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the Blogging the Boys Podcast Network. Leave us a rating, write a review wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. Tell us what you think, anything you would like us to do differently to improve your podcast listening experience. And if you ever want to talk to us about anything at all, any Cowboys hot topics, offer up any apologies about the OBJ thing, or do you have a shiny hiney and dabble in the bidet? Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at DannyPhantom24, and Rabs is at RabbleRouser, spelled RABBLEROUSR. And don't forget to check out all the great podcasts throughout the entire week. Every day we got something new for you. Tomorrow we'll have the World's Team with Meg Murray and Paul Stewart, so make sure to check that out. But that's all we have for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay happy, stay true to the silver blue, and we will catch you later.
Class dismissed.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.